Good morning and welcome to the breakfast show on Faith FM with Scaffy and Lindsay. This is the best place to start your day with positive and uplifting thoughts.
You're listening all across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88 depending on where you are, or you can listen to us through our Faith FM app anywhere in the world.
And today, if you are listening live, it's Friday the 21st of August 2026. I'm in the studio with Lindsay. Good morning to you, Lindsay.
Good morning, Scaffy.
And we also have producer Jules with us, her first solo flight in this program as a producer. Good morning to you, Jules.
Good morning, guys.
How are you feeling? Butterflies in the belly?
A little bit nervous. Jill said she's on the text line, so I've always got my backup. But I'm feeling good, feeling confident.
Yeah, well, we're feeling excited that you're doing your first solo flight. That's big.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm really excited to do it.
That's already counting as a gratitude. But I also have another gratitude. I have a gratitude for Australian cancer researchers.
Really?
Yeah, very grateful because, look, these are people that are dedicating their lives to fight against a certain disease. And when you look into that, it's quite the work. Sometimes it's the work of a lifetime. Sometimes we're talking about decades, 30, 40 years to research and try to find out solutions for, like, one disease or one type of cancer among so many. But we had a breakthrough, and some Australian cancer researchers, they developed the very first cancer vaccine of the world. And basically what they do is that you remove it's for melanoma. You remove the melanoma, they take it to analysis, they scan the DNA of the cancer cells, and then they develop a vaccine specifically for that person, so that it will teach their cells to hunt and fight just these cancer cells.
Interesting.
So next time that they show up, boom, they're gone.
There you go.
It's the first time in the world and made right here in Australia. How exciting is that?
It's very exciting.
Pretty cool.
Mm. And what about you, Lindsay? What are you grateful for today?
Ooh, what am I grateful for today? Man, I have so many things to be grateful for. I am grateful that this is just a really beautiful place to live, honestly. I live in such a beautiful place. Yesterday, the sun was out and the grass is green and the sky was blue and I was just happy. I went for about 3 long walks yesterday and I got to be out in the sunshine and nature. I think I walked probably about 80 minutes all up. So, I mean, they're not all 3 long walks to make 80 minutes, but I had a great time.
You beat me because I exercised yesterday for only 70 minutes.
Oh. 17 or
70? 70.
70.
But it was in an exercise bike.
Like in a single session?
In a single session.
Yeah, I couldn't do that, man. It's not for me.
That's still over an hour of exercise. That's pretty good.
That's all right.
It's a lot more than some people
do. 35 kilometers, something like that.
What do you normally do in a day? What?
About that, right? About, an hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you, Jules? What are you grateful for?
Actually, I'm really grateful for your study on Esther. It's driven me to do a little bit more reading, and I've been listening to sermons on the way down, on my drive down. Yeah.
Oh, so you're going to help run this?
Yes, if you have
Bible
the insights, share the gold with us, sister.
Well, you guys have got some pretty good insights, so if I have anything to add, I will definitely add.
You've been doing your research. We need to hear from you this morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. See how we go. See what I can add.
Very nice. Mm. Very nice. And look, I think we have more time for some more gratitudes.
Yeah, what's another gratitude that you have, Scaffy?
I am grateful for studying.
Studying?
Yeah, studying. Yesterday I was studying. I'm enrolled in an online course in counseling. It's just like, you know, a course that I can do at my own time whenever I have the time and everything. So, yesterday I sat down for a good hour. So, you know, I'm going to learn some better skills here so I can help people.
Awesome.
So I'm just grateful for that.
Cool. What's one take-home message you've gotten from that study so far?
One take-home message that I got from the study so far. Look, it was a technical thing. It's talking about the like the first time that you're sitting with a person with the purpose of, you know, counseling them and helping them to troubleshoot their problems. And one of the things that is adamant is that you have a little bit of a contract, where you clarify the expectations, the things you can do, the things you cannot do. And you allow the person as well to set the tone in terms of, okay, what is it that you really want to do and prioritize and focus? So I enjoyed that because sometimes, before if you and I are chatting you come to me with, you know, a life problem, I would want to jump in and solve the problem for you.
Yeah.
Versus now I'm learning, hey, you know what? I'm just going to listen to Lindsay and I'm going to help her solve her own problem so that she can get those problem solving skills instead of me imposing what I think is best for your life. I can consider that you are the expert in your own life and I can help you come up with the answer. It's much more sustainable that way.
There you go.
Because we have the answers, don't we? We just have sometimes blocked by whatever we are blocked by and we just need someone to help probe those out of us.
And sometimes it's just helping see the problem from a different angle, different perspective. Sometimes you're not seeing a certain thing. Yep. And when you have someone that you can, you know, talk about, you know, whatever you're going through, that often helps to see the problem from different angles. Say, oh, yeah, look at this angle. This angle is it's much more.
Someone objectively to look at your problem as opposed to emotionally.
Yeah.
You can get stuck in the emotion. And
you're very right. Mm. All right. What about you, listening friend? What are you grateful for? Text us here, 0491-064-669. Today's show, we're going to be getting introduced to Haman, the villain of the story of Esther.
The big,
we're going to be talking about... we're going to be talking about a man who survived 15 days in an underwater cave. I'm also going to be talking about the search for the teenager Lily Hooper. Now it is over. In our interview today, why did God command people to be stoned on the Sabbath? That and much more in today's show. So
you're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And today is a very historical moment for our show because producer Jules, for the first time, she's going to give us the quiz question on her first solo flight today. So please, Jules, tell us, what do you got?
Okay, first quiz question on my first solo flight is, what unusual item did Rachel steal from her father, Laban? What unusual item did Rachel steal? Yes, well done. Both our... coasts have got the answer to that. What unusual item did... Yes, and Lindsay has got the actual word. Well done, Lindsay. Technical. Mm-hmm. Oh, got one up on Scaffy at the moment.
No, I know the word as well. But look, I'm actually rejoicing that you are so happy. You get more information than me. I'm just enjoying that you're enjoying.
The smile on her face is beaming. Right. If our listeners, if you guys know the answer to this, please text us on 0491 064 669. That's 0491 064 669. If you know what unusual item Rachel stole from her father Laban, you can find that in Genesis 31:19 if you need a hint.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's an interesting item, and the importance of that item is interesting too. Lindsay, we're going to talk about your friend Haman today. He's going to show up in our story. And so let's read chapter 3, verse 1 from in the book of Esther, please.
Okay, so chapter 3, verse 1 says... After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage.
Okay, let's just pause here for a second. Let's pause here for a second because there is some very interesting things about this guy, Haman. He mentioned that he's an Agagite.
Yes.
What does, you know, what do you think of
that? Well, usually if something has "ite" on the end, it means like the people of that place or the people of that people group, essentially. So an "ite" of an Agag. What is an Agag? Agag was a king of the Amalekites way, way back in Israel's history when they first came into the Promised Land, into Canaan. Back after the wilderness wanderings, they came into the land of Canaan. Actually, during the wilderness wanderings, they even encountered the Amalekites. But it was during the time of the very first king of Israel, King Saul, who would then be followed by King David. King Saul, when he was... Early on in his reign, he was anointed and then he was given the instructions to, he had to come up against the Amalekites and fight against them. But he decided to not kill every single person or every single animal mm-hmm. like Samuel instructed him to do. Mm-hmm. Instead, he decided to keep certain of the spoils, but also he kept the king and the king's wife alive. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Samuel went and executed the king after he told off King mm-hmm. King mm-hmm. Saul. However, it seems that the king's wife, Agag's wife, gave birth, and there were more people who were following after them. Like, it wasn't completely wiped out.
Yeah, look, you're I love it. You give such a great history recap here, because this is exactly what's happening. And I wanted to bring your attention to, like, the big picture that the book of Esther is telling us, the meta narrative. And I think this is in itself, there is like a practical spiritual application for us, which I'm going to give in one moment. Agag was the king of the Amalekites. He was not executed by King Saul, you know, opposing the orders of God himself. He wanted to preserve him. He thought that that's going to, you know, bring him more political capital and whatnot. But the Amalekites are the quintessential enemies
yes.
of God's people. I think that they were even worse than what the Philistines were, because the Amalekites, they had, in the history of Israel, particularly in the book of Numbers, the Amalekites were the people group that attacked the Israelites when they were at their most vulnerable.
Yes.
They're thirsty, they're starving, looking for water. And instead of giving them water, or at least just letting them be, they took that opportunity, their weakness, their fragility, their vulnerability, to attack them. Mm. So
it wasn't a fair fight.
It was not a fair fight. And then God said, look, because of their absolute wickedness and lack of honor, they need to be wiped out.
Yeah.
You know, as a people.
Yeah, because that's like a corrupt part of the character of that entire people group.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Because look, back in the days, you know, if you were like, there are exceptions.
There is like rules of war in yes. the ancient world, as even there in are ancient today. Words. Yeah.
And there are exceptions. But look, if you're part of a certain people group, you believe what everybody believes. Mm-hmm. And there are some people here and there that break through that. But basically, you have the character of your own people. And Agag was the king of the Amalekites. Now we see here that we have Haman the Agagite versus Mordecai, the son of Kish, the son of, you know, from a Benjamite.
He was Benjamite, yes. And when it says son of Kish, he's not saying that his actual dad's name was Kish. He is actually tracing his lineage back to exactly. that of the father of King Saul.
Because King Saul was the actual son of Kish.
Actual son of Kish. So this is the new. It's kind of like Jesus being the second Adam mm-hmm. in Romans. This is the second son of Kish. The second Saul who was meant to deal with the king of the Amalekites.
That's right. So we're
and now we
here.
Have the new son of the king of the Amalekites, mm-hmm. the Agagite. So it's like the new face-off hundreds of years later, finishing what was started back then but wasn't properly completed.
That's exactly right. And this is the meta-narrative that I'm talking about. We're seeing here the great controversy, the great conflict between good and evil being played out in the story of Esther. We're seeing the Amalekites versus Saul all over again, this time through Haman and the Mordecai. And the application that we have, of course, the book of Esther is pointing us to say, oh, wow. I mean, these guys, I thought that, you know, it's kind of like these horror movies where, you know, the good guys are trying to get rid of the bad guys, but then the bad guys just keeps showing up and keeps coming back. You think that they're gone, but they're not. This is exactly what's happening here. And then when you look even one layer beyond that, you see the great controversy between the forces of Jesus, the followers of Jesus, and the followers of Satan. And the thing is, that story is not unique to Esther. That story also applies to your life, Lindsay, and to my life, and to the life of every believer. We find ourselves constantly in situations where good and evil are fighting to see who's going to prevail. And the application is we need to – I learned to see my life in that context of the great controversy between good and evil. Sometimes things are just more than they like to say. Sometimes you're trying to do something for God and then you find opposition for that to happen? Well, I have to look into that as a lens between of good versus evil as well. So, hey, that's a spiritual component here that we're reliving again and again. And that's what I love in the book of Esther. That battle between Satan and Jesus, it can be seen, it can be felt, and it can be lived in the life of every believer. Mm-hmm. You know, and in so many areas, like, you know, just to give one perhaps easy to follow example, in the area of addictions. Every time that, you know, we are tempted with an addiction, the great controversy is being reenacted in our own lives. You know, with Satan trying to tempt us to defile our bodies, defile our minds, and Jesus is pleading, fighting. No, I'm here, I'm supporting, we're fighting against that. And who's going to win? And sometimes Jesus wins, sometimes Satan wins. But the important thing is that even when we fall and we fail, we have to go back and shake the dust, say, hey, Lord, how can we win this battle the next time and the next time? So that the next time that a similar situation occurs, we're better prepared. You know, I'm a big fan of the 12 steps programs.
Yeah,
you know, to deal with addictions, and I think that they offer some amazing, valuable tools for all kinds of addictions, really. And one of the acronyms that I learned in one of these 12 steps programs is called HALT.
HALT?
HALT.
What is that?
Yes. Have you heard about that?
Of course. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired.
If you're hungry, if you're angry, if you're lonely, if you're tired, that's often a trigger point for us to fall into a behavior, an addiction, or an unhealthy coping mechanism that we have. So what do? You prevent as much as possible to be in that situation in the first place.
So you need to have a snack attack.
Maybe the snack attack is the thing that you're trying to avoid. But
I think it's just creating a level of balance in your life. Yes. Like it's giving you an armory, like a toolkit to actually prevent the addiction before the temptation. Yeah. So
Look, I'm hungry. Well, let me you know fix that, and let me organize my day in such a way that I'm eating at the same times every day,
good,
and I'm
nutritious
good
meals.
Nutritious meals that are going to allow me to feel satisfied and so on. Angry. Oh, if I'm angry, I know that I am more likely to indulge or to transgress in a certain behavior.
Mm.
Well, so if I'm angry, I need to have better coping mechanisms. Let's, for example, I'm going to go out for a walk. Or if I'm feeling lonely, what do I do if I'm feeling lonely? Maybe I would just, again, go outside or go meet some people. Go, I don't know. Different. There's always good mechanisms for coping. There's also unhealthy mechanisms for coping. And the science and the fun of it is to find and replace the bad coping mechanisms to all these things by better and healthier and Jesus-approved coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of them as well around.
Hmm.
So that's the story here. That's why the Agagite, you know, if you're reading the book of Esther just very casually, you will miss out on that detail.
Oh, yeah, you always have to dig into the details.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, why do we have such long lineages in various different chapters of the Bible? This is why. Mm-hmm. So we can figure out who the Agagites were, what's the backstory, what did they get up to? This is why we have those long lists of boring names that go on and on and on.
Yeah, well, so definitely one of the reasons.
Yeah.
So let's read verse 2, please. Because verse 2, says here...
As far as verse 2?
That people are about... Actually, I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Is it a sin to bow down in respect to a person of authority?
What do you think? I don't...
Is it automatically
necessarily think so? I don't think so. I don't know. Is it?
No, it's not. I mean,
okay.
you're
just
see,
staring at me weird.
No, you see people bowing down. You see people bowing down all the time in the Bible.
It's a cultural thing for respect. We don't do it in Australia, but it happens in Japan. Yeah. A lot of people bow.
Deeply
to each other, and from one place to another. It depends on the culture.
That's right. And so, why is Mordecai not bowing down? Is he just being stubborn? Is he having like a personal dispute? Does he have a chip on his shoulder and he just wants to pick up a fight with the Agagite? Well, we'll find out more about that in our next segment.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
You are listening to Keith and Kristen Getty with Across the Lands. This is The Breakfast Show on Faith FM, and it is now the best time of the day's show. It is, of course, quiz time. What's our quiz answer for that first quiz question, please, producer Jules?
So the unusual items were household idols.
Also called teraphim.
Also called teraphim, yes.
Yeah, they were like a
why are
like
they
a
important?
Piece of log with like a whirl or a knot on the top, kind of like a head. And if you look closely at the story of King David when he was married to Saul's daughter Michal, and then Michal had to basically deceive her father into making him think that, oh, David's sick, but actually David had run away out the window and far across the land, then she dressed up some of the household gods that he probably inherited from his grandmother Rahab, great-great-grandmother Rahab, and dressed them up and made them look like as if it was David sleeping, you know, all these bits of logs and head-shaped things, and eventually it turns out it was just a bunch of idols that had been covered in some rags and
fairy things. But do you know why, like, she was probably stealing that teraphim, that idol?
I don't know. That never quite made sense to me. Why do you think?
Actually, these idols, these household idols, they served a dual purpose.
Protection?
Yeah, protection. But for a worshiper of God, they didn't use
mean
that
anything,
as a protection.
Yeah.
However, they also served a purpose, these household idols. They served as your land titles.
What?
Yeah, land titles. So they would have, in particularly if you're like in a pagan land, in the temple of that pagan land, they usually have two copies of these idols.
Okay.
And this copy says, okay, the owner of this idol owns that property. The owners of this idol. So that it's kind of like a how you have
your
like
deed.
Your deed. They didn't have paper and pen and the way that we have deeds
so
today.
Like a little totem pole that you keep.
That's right. And so what she thought was, my father already took all of the money from our
husband,
our dowry.
Yeah.
And he didn't give them to them. So they said, look, you know what? I'm leaving here. But hey, I'm taking my inheritance in me just in case.
Wow.
It was self-preservation.
There you go. I never thought of it from that angle before.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Isn't it interesting? She said, let me take seven because look, I don't, knowing my father, I don't think we're going to see the color of that land ever again. So just keeping that just in case. So, you know, when I come back here, I know I have something to die on.
And do you remember how she got away with stealing them and he never found out where they ended up?
Jealous.
She sat on top of them and she told her dad when he went searching through all their stuff, I'm sorry, Dad, I'm on my period. So she couldn't get up and stand and, you know, disclose the location of the teraphim that she was just sitting on top of. And he was like, okay, you can just stay there. I don't want to go anywhere near that.
Yeah. I'm sure we've all used that excuse once or twice to get out of PE.
Of course. I never finished swimming because of that.
All right, well, let's get into the next one. So please, Jules, what's the next quiz question, number two?
Question number two is, what two people died after lying to the Holy Spirit about the price of their land? What two people died after lying to the Holy Spirit about the price of the land? Lindsay has it and Scaffy has it.
Yeah.
Well done, guys. If you have the answer to our quiz question today, please text us on 0491 064 669. That's 0491 064 669. If you know which two people died after lying to the Holy Spirit about the price of their land. And if you want to look that up, it's in Acts 5, 1 to 10.
I have a beef against that passage, but I'm going to tell you after we review the answer.
Okay.
It's probably not for the reasons that you're thinking.
I'm not thinking.
Okay.
So,
so then definitely not.
I'm just staring blankly at you going, okay.
All right, let's go back here because I threw a little bit of a curveball to you, Lindsay.
Okay.
And I asked you, hey, why did Mordecai didn't bow down? I mean, Abraham bowed down to Gentiles and the Israelites did bow down to kings. They did bow down for people in positions of authority. And all of a sudden, Mordecai, the Jew, was not bowing down to Haman. And it is a little bit weird. And of course, Haman noticed that and he's taking issue at that. And my question is, why is Mordecai not bowing down? Is he being obnoxious? Is he being proud? What is happening here? Can you please give us, you know, what do you think? What is your opinion on that, Lindsay?
Look, I honestly don't know why he chose not to do it, but I think he probably was like, I'm going to bow to the king, I'm going to bow to God, and that's about it. Like, good luck getting anything else out of me. But okay, I think he knew who Haman was and who he was descended from, and he was like, this is just completely against my religion, bro. Like, I'm not going to bow to someone who my ancestor was meant to annihilate.
Yes. I think that you are spot on. There are a few theories of why is that the case. The Bible doesn't tell us. It leaves for us to try to figure out and speculate. But there's a few possibilities. One of them is him being an Agagite, meaning that he has a vow to exterminate the Jews. And Haman say, "Hey, look, I'm sorry, but I cannot bow down to such a wicked man." It's not only a position of authority, but he recognized in Haman, the Agagite, an absolute enemy of the Jewish people, a person who has vowed to, if whatever he can, to destroy the Jews, and because of that, Mordecai is saying, "Hey, I cannot bow down to you because this is wrong." That's one explanation, and I think it's part of it. I think it's an absolute part of it. There's two other points here. One point is that the Bible uses a very unusual way to say to bow down.
Okay.
He says, and all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage. And in the Hebrew, that's in the book of Esther, in the Aramaic, it says here, and to bow down and to prostrate themselves. It's like kind of a double worship.
Yeah.
It is very, very rare in the Bible that you find. Usually find like they bow down or they prostrated themselves. But you never find it, except in that book of Esther, the two twice. One after the other. He wanted me not. It's just almost like complete submission. I don't want you just to bow. I want you to bow down first.
Like lie face down in the dirt.
And after you bow down, then I want you to submit to me by prostrating yourself.
Yeah.
Some of the rabbinic traditions actually even add an interesting detail there. And again, it's a tradition. When we say tradition, it's just that, a tradition. Something interesting. It's not in the Bible, so you do with it whatever you want. However, in some of the Jewish traditions, they say that Agag also carried in his clothes, or perhaps hanging around his neck, an idol.
Oh, okay.
So when he were bowing down, he said, look, you're not only bowing down, you're bowing down to me. And you're also prostrating before my idol, my God.
Oh, okay.
So there is an element of worship there.
Sure.
It was not just any kind of bowing down. It was bowing down as a God.
Hmm. Okay.
And this is why, even, for example, when you see in the story of early Christianity, the first century, one of the things that were getting a lot of Christians in trouble was because they refused to worship Caesar as a God. They refused to bow down as a God, because they knew that bowing down, they were Caesar is not only being honored as a king, but he wanted to be worshipped as a God. And Christian says, "Look, I can't, because you think that yourself that you are a God, and you're asking me to prostrate myself in that capacity. I can't." And of course, because of that, many of them ended up being thrown in the lion's den and things that are even worse than that.
There you go.
So there you go. So I don't think that Mordecai is just being prideful. I think there's more going on here. Again, it's subtle. It's in between the lines. The tip that the Bible gives us is that double conjunction of bowing down plus prostrating yourself or paying homage. And so there is something more going on here. Agagite wanted to be worshipped as a god, and Haman said, "I'm a Jew. I can bow down in respect, but I cannot bow down in worship."
There you go. That's a really good point. I'd never seen that before.
Now, isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
I find it interesting too. Well, let's move on to verse 3 and see what happens.
All right. Verse 3 says, "Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, 'Why do you transgress the king's command?' Now it happened when they spoke to him daily and he would not listen to them, that they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew."
Yeah, so they say, "Hey, look, I'm a Jew, man. Can't do this."
I find this really interesting that the other guys who are working there, so the king's servants who are within the king's gate, said to Mordecai, like they're asking him, like they're just like co-workers. Yeah, like, why do you think you can do this and we have to do it? Why do you think you don't have to?
Yeah, what's going on here, bro?
And he keeps like, no, I'm a Jew. I'm not going to do that. And so they tattle on him.
Yeah.
So Haman probably wouldn't have noticed very much.
Yeah.
Without these other co-workers telling him.
Good observation.
They're like, who do you think you are, bro?
And then these guys, they dubbed him in into Haman and said, hey, did you know that there's a guy that refuses to bow down to you?
Mm.
He did not probably even notice at that time.
No. He was so full of himself. He's like, yeah look at all these people bowing down to me. Yeah, amazing. I'm just the greatest. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, actually, no, there's this one guy. Sorry, Haman. He's not doing it. What are you going to do? Are you going to let that stand? And he's like, actually, no, of course not.
Yeah. And again, look, I think this is a reflection or an echo of the story of Daniel and his friends.
Mm.
Because remember when...
At the idol.
Yeah, at the idol worshipping in Genesis chapter 3.
There's three guys who are not bowing down and so they get taken, chucked in the fiery furnace.
But again, it was not King Nebuchadnezzar who plotted them.
No, it was the co-workers.
Yeah, say, so, hey, King, by the way, there's some guy...
There's always the jealous co-workers who think, why do these guys get special treatment and not me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's heavy.
Yeah. Have you ever had a jealous coworker do anything like that before?
I might have, might not have. Who knows?
Who knows?
I know.
Yeah.
Let's go to verse 5.
Okay. Moving along rapidly then, yes. Hey? When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. So he's not even calling them the Jews. They're just the people of this one guy
at
this point to him.
And it is a crazy thing, isn't it? That they wanted to destroy... Hey, it's not... His thing was so deeply rooted that it was not enough for him to just destroy Mordecai and move
anyone
on.
Anyone related to him.
Anyone. All of your people would die. So it looks like it was just the excuse that he was needing to have to express the wickedness of his heart.
Yeah. Wow. Some people are just full and evil, hey?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Shall keep reading?
Yeah.
In verse 7, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that is, the lot, before Haman to determine the day and the month until it fell on the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain.
Yeah, let's just pause here. Have you seen this pattern before?
I have. I think in Ezra and Nehemiah, somewhere in there, this was happening just not long ago.
Yes, Ezra and Nehemiah, Daniel.
Yep.
Jesus.
Yep.
Is it lawful or is not lawful to pay tribute to Caesar? You know, they always wanted to frame Jesus as someone that was breaking the law against Caesar, as an enemy of Caesar.
Satan is such a legalist. He uses legal things as much as possible to get his way.
Absolutely.
And he does that through so many different
throughout people. The history of the world, whenever the people of God got in trouble, was because Satan somehow made it seem that the laws of man were conflicting with the laws of God. And those who are faithful to God and to the laws of God who refused to worship against their conscience, they got in trouble. And we see that exact same pattern in the book of Revelation chapter 13. Again, we have a law, worldwide law, for people to worship the beast. And a group of people said, no, we're not worshiping the beast. We're not bowing down and prostrating ourselves before Haman. And then people are going to say, hey, look, there's a whole bunch of people there that are not following the laws. They think they're special. And as a result, let's go and destroy each one of them and kill them, put them in jail, not let them to buy or sell. This is a pattern. This is how Satan tries to annihilate the people of God throughout the centuries. He's trying to put people of God, for those who are faithful, right? Because there's going to be people in Israel, so to speak, Israel, right? Spiritual Israel, that they, of their own will and of their own accord, transgress against the laws of God. These are not a problem for Satan. These are agents for Satan in some ways, you know. These are the Nicolaitans. It's okay for us to transgress. You know, it's okay. You know, the grace is covering us, kind of a thing. And cheap grace theory. But there are those who say, look, I am going to obey the laws of men, 100%. Like, I want to obey 100% of the laws of my country, except when the laws of my country are pushing me against the laws of my God. And this is an interesting thing. When I was studying to become an Australian citizen, one of the things that was part of the test, it says, hey, do you understand that the laws of Australia supersede any laws that of any religion? And I said, yeah, no, I understand that. And I am going to comply with all the laws of Australia. But if the Australia, for example, enacts a law saying, hey, you cannot worship your God on the seventh day, for example, I have to say very respectfully, I don't wish any trouble in anyone. But look, if I cannot comply with that one. Mm. Just because there is a higher law.
Yeah.
And all the laws that are in harmony or are not at least in opposition to the word of God, I'm absolutely fulfilling. Even if they're bad laws, by the way.
Mm.
If there's a law that says you have to wear a chicken hat every day.
A chicken hat?
Yeah. I'll wear it. You have to dress up like a chicken. Yeah, it's okay. No problem. I think it's a stupid law. But you know what? I'm going to comply with it. But the moment that there's a law that is interfering with how we worship God, if it's going against any of the Ten Commandments, that's where the line is drawn on the sand. And as a follower of Jesus, I say, I cannot transgress against my Savior. So if you want to put me in jail, okay, let's go to jail. That's how it is. And that's what the Bible says. It's going to happen at the end of times. And every believer will have to make that decision for themselves. And I hope and I pray that God will give me the courage and the strength to abide by this conviction. Because I know that from a human perspective, it's impossible to do that.
Oh, yeah. We talk a big game, but we might still be scared.
Yeah.
But God can give us the grace that we need as the time comes.
That's right. That's a gift from God. So here we go. Haman and Mordecai, the conflict is set. What's going to happen next? Well, you'll find out next week.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Let's get into the answer to the quiz question, please, producer Jules.
So the two people who died after lying to the Holy Spirit were Ananias and Sapphira.
Yes, Ananias and Sapphira. And you know what? I have a beef against that passage.
Why?
Just because I love the name Sapphira.
Oh.
Sapphira. I think it's just like a beautiful name. I wish I could even name my, you know, daughter that name.
I mean, Delilah amazing. Is a nice name as well, if it wasn't so messed up in the Bible.
That's right. Jezebel.
Jezebel was a great name.
Yeah. Jezebel. I
met some Jezzies.
Really?
I do. Yes. So look, I think that Sapphira just kind of ruined it for everyone else.
Sapphira. How could you?
So
what have we got coming up in the rest of today's show?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about a man who survived for 15 days.
What?
In an underwater cave. I'm going to be talking about the rescue or at least the search of Lily Hooper, a teenage girl who went for a hike in Sydney and disappeared. And we are also wanting to talk about...
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.